Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za. Kaya Talk.
Monday to Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m. Well, thank you very much for staying with us. Jeez, so much has happened and we haven't had a chance to have a political analyst to just give us a sense of really what all of this means. You know, we've been busy with these manifestos leading up to the elections. And of course, we're giving everybody a chance to come and express themselves. Who are they? So that you know who you're going to be voting for. But there are lots of moving parts. And I just want us to get a better sense of what all of this means. Dr. Ongama Mtinka is on the line with us. He's a political analyst. He's so graciously agreed to have this conversation with us. Dr. Mtinka, thanks so much for your time. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening to you and your listeners, Pamela. Thank you for having me.
We haven't spoken in a while, but I want to start with the most recent development. What did you make of this Afrikaner Leadership Network declaration and this collaboration that we saw, publicly? Was it a day or two ago? What did you make of it? And it's now coming to the fray in this political environment.
So I missed that specific one. Unfortunately, I've been working on the same test. Yeah. With my students.
Sure.
So the last I saw of it is the university around the Afrikaners nationalism development.
Yes.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
No, we'll have plenty of time to discuss it when it grows and I suppose matures as a formation. But you know, so much has also happened since the formation of the MK party, which is interesting because as we still speak, former President Jacob Zuma is still a member of, suspended member of the ANC. What are you making of this dynamic, the ANC versus the MK party, particularly in the courts as well?
Well, first of all, I think it's been an interesting political legal issue. First, I think that the fact that both parties have had confidence in the institutions of the country, in varying degrees, obviously, is a very good thing. We know that early on, when some within the MK party were suspicious of getting fair treatment, both from the Electoral Commission, the Electoral Court, as well as the courts of the land, there were unfortunate agitations for violence. But I'm happy that there has been an acceptance of court outcomes, obviously, because they are in favor of the NK party.
Mm-hmm.
But we should not underestimate, Pamela, the impartiality, or at least acting in good faith, of the quasi judicial institutions that have acted on this NK party matter. First, the Electoral Court, so first the IEC, in fact, and then the Electoral Court, as well as now the courts.
Mm-hmm.
With the IEC, I think for me, following the story of how initially they rejected registration because of some irregularities, and then went on to register the party and defend that decision when it was being challenged, shows that we cannot, falter this institution as acting in a partisan way. They're acting in ways that are in defense of their decisions that they have taken. It's interesting how the narrative changed from them being seen to be acting in good faith by MK party as far as they defended the decisions to register the party and then defend that in the Electoral Court, but go with some within MK party now raising concern when the IEC is taking a step at the Constitutional Court that seeks to clarify a decision in which that has been made by the Electoral Court in favor of the MK party, but where again the IEC was there defending itself only for the MK party now to raise concerns when on this issue of the candidate of former President Jacob Zuma, only for them to suddenly think that the IEC is not acting in good faith when it goes to the Constitutional Court. But, I mean, these are politicians. They will do these. They will have these. But it's been wonderful to watch how the legal political nexus is being played in ways that inspire confidence in the IEC, but also in our courts as well as the electoral court.
How important will that outcome be at the Constitutional Court? Whatever the outcome is, as you said, you know, now the IEC going to the Constitutional Court, wanting this matter to be clarified soon rather than later. How important do you think that particular outcome will be in what pans out going forward?
Well, it is important. Remember that there were interesting issues of interpretation of what it means to have a conviction and therefore to have a conviction and then a subsequent remission of sentence, and what that means as far as the provision if convicted without the option of a fine. So within the MK party camp, they see it as not needing further clarity by the Constitutional Court. But I think that there is room for the higher court, which is the final arbiter of disputes, to be able to actually confirm that the decision that has been made is the correct interpretation of how this should be taken going forward. I think it's important there. And by the way, even if the Constitutional Court, can affirm that, in fact, this is a correct interpretation of events, post facto, or they may correct the interpretation of the Electoral Court. Yeah. But to cast aspersions on the IEC seeking clarity, while I think they are acting in good faith, when they were defending their decision, in court, when they were being challenged by the IEC, I think it shows a little bit of duplicity on the part of the politicians.
That's why I ask how important it is, because let us just say the IEC, the Concord says, well, no, actually, the IEC was right on this one, and obviously that will change everything for the MK party, and the matter for the MK party is quite central for them going into this election. We haven't seen the MK party lose up until, if they do lose, up until this particular judgment. That would, how do you think the MK party will read that and react to it?
Actually, everything is relative here.
Sure.
Because to the extent that they want to leverage the political capital that comes with former President Jacob Zuma, indeed, then they stand to lose a lot. But at issue here is not whether or not to accept them in the ballot. It's where it's the candidature of former President Zuma.
Yeah.
Which is
quite important for them.
Absolutely. Yeah. But life can go on if the court finds in favor of the interpretation of the IEC and the first person that raised an objection to his candidature in the first place.
I'm cautiously listening in because I am asking myself, the party that has centered itself so much around its leader, you think life, as you say, will go on the way in which we think? Yeah, you know what I mean.
So that's I was saying a normative statement that it should.
Yes, I get you.
Whether it would is
another story.
I think that they would be immature, really, for lack of a better word, for them to have enjoyed so many victories from the judicial / quasi-judicial system, only for them to have to be selective about what is it that they accept as outcomes of the courts and what is not. Interestingly, the correspondence confirming acceptance of the Constitutional Court office is from the Deputy Chief Justice, which I think that whether the court is being game theoretic or not, I think it helps to not cloud the behavior of the Concord in this matter.
Let's then talk about scenarios looking into the post-elections. All the polls are talking about MK Party coming out at some point, 1, 2, or 3, maybe even 4, especially when you look at what may happen in KZN. Your take on how KZN is going to play itself out and the positioning of the IFP party in this scenario?
Sure. So we know that KZN Gauteng, the Western Cape, I think the Eastern Cape, contribute significantly to the national share of votes for parties because of population, the bigger populations.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, if a newcomer is doing exceptionally well in KZN, in Gauteng, and particularly those provinces and Mpumalanga, it actually does say that they are going to make a dent to the ANC. By the way, many of us were under no illusions about the potential of the party to cause a significant dent to the ANC.
Mm.
Because if you follow the history of electoral loss of support for the ANC, it's almost exclusively due to splinter activity. If you take early in the democratic period, the UDM effect, and then the COPE effect, then the EFF effect, imagine when not only there are splinters in the ANC, two splinters, EFF and technical splinters, as it were, EFF and MK Party, but also there's a crowding in the electoral market by centrist to centre-left parties.
Yes.
All of those serve to confirm, in some varying degrees, what the polls are showing us. Varying degrees because nothing is going to beat election results.
Sure,
so the latest election result, being 21, shows the ANC in the mid-40s. And if we look at the polls, the worst case is in the late 30s, and the best case is around the mid-40s.
Yeah.
So I think that for me, this sustains prospects for the ANC dropping below 50% and the splinter parties taking a significant chunk of that support base.
And the scenario of the IFP in KZN, your take on how all of this will play out for them?
Very interesting. I think that there will be mixed outcomes for the IFP. Unfortunately, this is the first election that it is without the patron, Inkosi uMangosuthu Buthelezi. And if we, I know in South Africa, strongman politics have not been that dominant, but they have increasingly becoming a factor in voter behavior. So if you take away, if you look at the IFP and how it is failing, it doesn't have a charismatic leader. I take nothing from Dato Tlhabisa, but he's not a Mangosuthu Buthelezi, he's not a Jacob Zuma. So the party is under siege in that sense. But I think that it's also bound to receive some of the support base that's actually leaving the ANC because of the infighting. So whether or not theirs will be a net gain or net loss, or in fact neither gain nor loss in effect, it remains to be seen.
A scenario where perhaps those people would the IFP lose some of its members to the MK Party?
Definitely. Because remember this strong man thesis that I'm advancing, that President Zuma offers that in KZN in almost equally to the party, the state president in KZN. So he counter. So I think between him and President Ramaphosa in KZN, they would be contesting, and then I think the ISP doesn't have, it has some good. It's punched significantly in the National Assembly, but not with as much gravitas as these other politicians who spent with a long established credibility without living in the shadow of another leader in there.
The fate of current President Cyril Ramaphosa within the ANC is in his second term now. If the ANC does fall below 50%, what do you think is going to be, you know, his position in the ANC? You've heard many of them, EFF, saying they will never work with Cyril Ramaphosa. I'm not sure they won't work with ANC, but they specifically single him out to say they would never work with him in particular. And obviously, you know, it changes the scenario. I'm not sure whether Jacob Zuma will work with Cyril Ramaphosa as well. So what do you think the ANC then, what will become of Cyril Ramaphosa in his second term within the ANC?
My answer is going to be split in two.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that as a result of the election outcomes per se, he's going to be in trouble. Mm. Regardless of what they are, precisely because he's just emerged from a conference. Wow, it's almost 2 years ago, actually.
Yes.
But anyway, he in that last conference, he got what former President Zuma got in the Mangaung conference, where he's got an ANC that's fully behind him, an NEC that's fully behind him, and if you look at it, all the factions that were opposed to him have seen no viable internal opposition within the ANC to the extent that they have all left the ANC. Mostly, actually, there are some remnants within the ANC,
but now, much weaker. You're right.
Yeah. So there's no viable immediate political alternative to him in the ANC. The reason why I had to segment my answer in two is because as soon as we get to the latter half of 2025, then the fireworks start.
Yes, always in the ANC.
We would be 2 years before the elective conference.
Yeah.
And I think that by then, if Paul Mashatile, deputy president, learns anything from President Cyril Ramaphosa, it will be that starting your campaign early. positions you to put up a good fight. So I think we may start to see ructions in there. But that also depends on to what extent does coalition does President Cyril Ramaphosa's ANC's approach to coalition making sow the seeds for internal rebellion to such an extent that when the deputy president shows his hand, by the way, this is very speculative because we don't know whether he wants the office so much that he would actually, you know, launch a campaign that seeks to challenge the president early enough.
Mm.
But if holding a nuance constant and taking vintage succession politics of the ANC to hold, I think that the fireworks would start in 2025. But if the ANC is able to come up with a solid approach to government and coalition making that doesn't pull it either to the left or to the right, but allows it the room to maintain a middle ground, it may also serve to quell any potential storms inside the party for a much longer period than it could be, to the extent that some want to succeed the president may actually feel, okay, we've got some stability in government, there's no need to upset that, let's wait until maybe January 2027 for us to show our hand. And then, you know, so I'm saying some of the key dependencies are the kind of government that the ANC will form from this election.
Lovely talking to you, Dr. Ongama Mtimka. Thank you so much for your time. He's a political analyst. We're just going through what are the scenarios post the election. Of course, everybody is speculating, but it's always good to flesh those out. Thanks very much for your time, Dr. Mtimka.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.